And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's January 13th, 13th day of the new year. 252 days remain till the year is over with. On this day in 27 BC, Octavian transfers the state to the free disposal of the Roman Senate and people. He receives Spain, Gaul, and Syria as his province for 10 years. In 532, the Nika riots break out during the racing season of the Hippodrome of Constantinople. As a result of discontent with the rule of the Emperor Justinian, he was not overly popular. 1435, Sicut Dudum, forbidding the enslavement of the Guanche natives in the Canary Islands by the Spanish, is promulgated by Pope Eugene IV. As the Pope rules, so the world must go. 1547, Henry Howard, Earl of Surrey, is sentenced to death for treason on the grounds of having quartered his arms to make them similar to those of the king, Henry VIII of England. Oh, well. 1793, Nicholas Jean Hugon de Basseville, representative of the revolutionary France, is lynched by a mob in Rome. That'll teach you. 1797, French Revolutionary Wars. A naval battle between a French ship of the line and two British frigates off the coast of Brittany ends with the French vessel running aground. Over 900 die in that little engagement. 1815, War of 1812, British troops capture Fort Peter in St. Mary's, Georgia. The only battle of the war to take place in that state. 1822, the design of the Greek flag is adopted by the First National Assembly at Epidaurus. 1833, U.S. President Andrew Jackson writes to Vice President Martin Van Buren expressing his opposition to South Carolina's defiance of federal authority in the nullification crisis. Now, the nullification crisis, for those that are not familiar, happened during the presidency of Jackson, involved a confrontation between the state of South Carolina and federal government. It ensued after South Carolina declared the federal tariffs of 1828 and 1832 unconstitutional and therefore null and void within the sovereign boundaries of the state. However, courts at the state and federal level, including the U.S. Supreme Court, repeatedly have rejected the theory of nullification by states. Basically, the federal position is, as the federal rules, so shall it be. Kind of like the Pope. 1840, the steamship Lexington burns and sinks 4 miles off the coast of Long Island. 139 people die. 1842, Dr. William Bryden, an assistant surgeon in the British East India Company Army during the First Anglo-Afghan War, becomes famous for being the sole survivor of an army of 4,500 men and 12,000 camp followers when he reaches the safety of a garrison at Jalalabad in Afghanistan. Imagine being, you got 16,500 people and you're the only one that makes it. 1847, Treaty of Cahuenga ends the Mexican-American War in California. 1849, establishment of the colony of Vancouver Island took place on this date. Also in 1849, the Second Anglo-Sikh War, Battle of Chilianwata, British forces retreat from the Sikhs. 1888, the National Geographic Society is founded in Washington, D.C. And a lot of young boys reveled in the topless pictures of natives. 1893, Independent Labor Party, the UK holds its first meeting. 1893, U.S. Marines land in Honolulu, Hawaii from USS Boston to prevent the Queen from abrogating the bayonet constitution. 1895, First Italo-Ethiopian War. The war's opening battle, the Battle of Kalatit, occurs. The Italians won. I mean, let's face it, a modern army versus folks on horseback with spears. Even the Italians couldn't lose them all. 1898, Emile Zola's Accuse exposes the Dreyfus Affair. In 1900, to combat Czech nationalism, Emperor Franz Joseph decrees German to be the language of the Austro-Hungarian armed forces. The 1908, the Rhodes Opera House fire in Boyerton, Pennsylvania, kills 171. 1910, first public radio broadcast takes place. A live performance of the operas Cavaliera Rusticana and Pagliacci is sent out over the airwaves from the Metropolitan Opera House in New York. 1915, a 6.7 Avezzano earthquake shakes the province of La Aquila in Italy with a maximum Mercalli intensity of 11. That's extreme. Kills between 29,978 and 32,610 people. 1920, the Reichstag mud blast January 13, 1920. The bloodiest demonstration in German history took place. 1935, a plebiscite in Saarland shows that 90.3% of those voting want to join Nazi Germany. 1939, the Black Friday bushfires burn 20,000 square kilometers of land in Australia. 71 people die. 1942, Henry Ford patents a soybean car, which is 30% lighter than a regular car. 1942, World War II. First use of an aircraft ejection seat by a German test pilot in a Hinkle HE-280 jet fighter. 1950, British submarine HMS Truchelant collides with an oil tanker in the Thames estuary. Kills 64. 1950, Finland forms a democratic relations with the People's Republic of, diplomatic relations with, People's Republic of China. 1951, First Indochina War. The Battle of Vinh Dinh begins. 1953, an article appears in Pravda accusing some of the most prestigious and prominent doctors, mostly Jews, in the Soviet Union of taking part in a vast plot to poison members of the top Soviet political and military leadership. It was all done to, I firmly believe, support the anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic actions by the Russian state. Which was bizarre because most of the Bolshevik leadership were Jewish. 1958, the Moroccan Army of Liberation ambushes a Spanish patrol in the Battle of Etchera. 1963, coup d'etat in Togo results in the assassination of President Sylvanus Olympio. 1964, anti-Muslim riots break out in Calcutta in response to anti-Hindu riots in East Pakistan. About 100 people are killed. 1964, in Manchester, New Hampshire, 14-year-old Pamela Mason is murdered. Edward Coolidge is tried and convicted of the crime, but the conviction set aside by the landmark Fourth Amendment case, Coolidge versus New Hampshire. 1966, Robert Weaver becomes the first African-American cabinet member when he's appointed United States Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. 1968, Johnny Cash performs live at Folsom State Prison. 1972, Prime Minister Kofi Abrefa Busia and President Edward Akuto Addo of Ghana are ousted in a bloodless military coup by Colonel Ignatius Kutu Acheampong. 1977, Japan Airlines cargo flight 1045, a Douglas DC-8, crashes on the runway during takeoff from Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport. Five people die. 1978, U.S. Food and Drug Administration requires all blood donations to be labeled paid or volunteer donors. 1982, shortly after takeoff, Air Florida Flight 90, a Boeing 737, crashes into Washington, D.C.'s 14th Street Bridge and falls into the Potomac River, killing 78, including four motorists off the bridge. 1985, a passenger train plunges into a ravine in Ethiopia, killing 428 in the worst railroad disaster in Africa. 1986, a month-long violent struggle begins in Aden, South Yemen, between supporters of Ali Nasir Muhammad and Abdul Fattah Ismail, resulting in thousands of casualties. 1988, Lee Ting-hui becomes the first native Taiwanese president of the Republic of China. 1990, Douglas Wilder becomes the first elected African-American governor as he takes office as governor of Virginia in Richmond. 1991, Soviet Union troops attack Lithuanian independence supporters in Vilnius, kills 14, wounds over 1,000. 1993, space shuttle program. The Endeavour heads for space for the third time as STS-54 launches from the Kennedy Space Center. 1993, the Chemical Weapons Convention is signed. 1993, Operation Southern Watch. The Air Force, the Navy, the RAF, and French Air Force jets attack AAA and SAM sites in southern Iraq. 1998, Alfredo Armando sets himself on fire in St. Peter's Square. That was a protest against homophobia. And of course, that made all the difference in the world. Dumb. 2001, an earthquake hits El Salvador, kills more than 800. 2012, the passenger cruise ship Costa Concordia sinks off the coast of Italy due to the Captain Francisco Satino's negligence and irresponsibility. There are 32 confirmed deaths and quite a number of others that are believed to have died as a result of the sinking. 2018, a false emergency alert warning of an impending missile strike in Hawaii causes widespread panic in that state. 2020, the Thai Ministry of Public Health confirms the first case of COVID-19 outside of China. And in 2021, outgoing U.S. President Donald Trump is impeached for a second time on a charge of incitement of insurrection following the storming of the Capitol 1 week prior. Now, quite frankly, he would have been impeached if he spit on the sidewalk. Even if nobody saw it, but somebody thought he might have. That's how the Democrats were doing their best to get rid of him. And now we have an old man who, you gotta wonder, does he keeps calling Vice President Harris president. You gotta wonder. Christian Feast Day, Blessed Veronica of Milan, Elian, Hilary of Poitiers, Mungo, St. Canute's Day, the last day of Christmas in Sweden and Finland, Constitution Day in Mongolia, Democracy Day at Cape Verde, Liberation Day in Togo, Old New Year's Eve in Russia, Belarus, Ukraine, Serbia, Montenegro, Republic of Srpska, and North Macedonia and its related observances. Malacca in Ukraine, Russia, and Belarus. Sidereal Winter Solstice Eve celebrations in South and Southeast Asian cultures. The last day of the 6 month Dakshinayana period. Bogi in Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu. Lohri in Punjab, Haryana, and Himachal Pradesh, Yoruka in Assam, Stephen Foster Memorial Day in the U.S., and Inayer in the Berbers. Okay, let's see what else we got. Odo, Count of Paris, succeeds Charles III, the Fat, to become King of West Francia. 1099, Crusaders set fire to Mara in Syria. 1404, the Act of the Multipliers is passed by the English Parliament. It forbids alchemists from using their knowledge to create precious metals. It was thought they could bring ruin on the state by creating more gold than the state could control. 1607, the Bank of Genoa fails after announcement of a national bankruptcy in Spain. 1610, Galileo Galilei discovers Callisto, fourth satellite of Jupiter. 1621, Jan Peter Zoon Cohen's fleet set sail to the Moluccas from Jakarta. 1630, letters patent is issued to Plymouth Colony. 1630, Chinese Emperor Chongzhen orders the arrest of military general Yan Changhuan. 1695, author, poet, and satirist Jonathan Swift is ordained an Anglican priest in Ireland. 1733, James Oglethorpe and 130 English colonists arrived at Charleston, South Carolina. 1785, John Walter publishes the first issue of the Times of London. 1822, the design of the Greek flag is adopted by the First National Assembly. 1830, the Great Fire in New Orleans is thought to have been set by rebel slaves. They never really found out for sure. 1849, Vancouver Island granted to Hudson Bay Company. 1863, the chenille yarn making machine patented by William Cantor in New York City. 1865, the Second Battle of Fort Fisher. 58 Union ships and 8,000 troops converge on Fort Fisher in North Carolina. 1873, PBS Pinchback relinquishes the office of Louisiana governor. 1874, a battle between jobless people and police in New York City leave hundreds injured. 1883, a fire in the Circus Ferroni in Berezkov in Poland kills 430. 1894, a revolution in Sicily crushed by government troops. 1902, textile workers strike in Enschede in the Netherlands until June 1st. 1908, Henri Farman becomes the first person to fly an observed circuit of more than 1 kilometer, winning the Grand Prix of Aviation. 1911, Roald Amundsen anchors at Walvis Bay in southwestern Africa. He was known as a polar explorer. 1913, Delta Sigma Theta, the world's largest black women's sorority, is founded at Howard University on this date. 1915, Winston Churchill, the first Lord of the Admiralty at that time, presents a plan for the assault of the Dardanelles. 1917, a train at Sierra Station in Romania catches fire and explodes. Between 800 and 1,000 die, making it the third worst rail accident in history. 1923, taking advantage of the chaotic condition in Germany, Hitler stages a demonstration with 5,000 stormtroopers and denounces the November crime, as he called it. 1927, U.S.-Mexico battle over oil interest. 1928, RCA and GE installed 3 test television sets in homes in Schenectady, New York, allowing American inventor E.F.W. Alexanderson to demonstrate the first home television receiver. The picture was poor and unsteady, and it was 1.5-inch square picture. 1930, the Mickey Mouse comic strip first appears on this date. 1938, the Church of England accepts the theory of evolution. 1942, an Allied conference on war trials is held on this date. 1942, Henry Ford patents a method of constructing plastic auto bodies. Now that's something that's really going to catch on, let me tell you. 1943, on this date, Adolf Hitler declares there will be total war against the Allies. 1943, U.S. infantry captures Galloping Horse Ridge in Guadalcanal. 1948, the first country music TV show, Midwestern Hayride, premieres on WLWT in Cincinnati, Ohio. Right down the street from WKRP in Cincinnati. 1951, German General Christian Hansen freed early from Dutch prison. 1954, military rule is established in Egypt. 318 Muslim Brotherhood members are arrested. 1958, the U.S. newspaper Daily Worker ceases publication. 1962, Chubby Checker's song The Twist, credited with starting the twist dance craze, goes to number one on the charts 2 years after first reaching the number one spot. It happened on this date. 1964, John Paul II becomes Archbishop of Krakow. He also became the 264th Pope. And one of the first that was confirmed was murdered. 1975, Henry Kissinger hints at military action against oil countries in case of actual strangulation of the industrialized world in the wake of the oil shock. He was Secretary of State at that point in time. And certainly that's all we needed. Let's go invade Saudi Arabia. Okay. We were talking yesterday about the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle. There's a number of other mysteries that are a little bit closer to home. For example, how many are aware of the fact that there is an ongoing murder spree? There we go. You know, mysterious deaths in a forest said to be controlled by Satanists. Mountain climbers found inexplicably mutilated. Large numbers of college men found dead in creeks. Hiker walks over the top of a hill in front of the rest of the hiking party and vanishes. And a little boy who disappears and then is found, who says he was taken by a shimmering woman. All these mysteries continued to exist with absolutely no progress made in solving them. Then we've got an entire village of Eskimos that vanish. Hunters are found dead in mysterious circumstances. Experienced climbers vanish. Their bodies are never found. And this is not modern occurrence. This has been going on forever. Let's talk about the Clapham Woods mystery. That's a wooded area in West Sussex in England, where many believe satanic and alien activity has been going on for a long time. Causes the death of wild animals, pets, and even people. Now, there was a big story in 40 and Times magazine I remember reading years ago. And it talks about how since the 1960s there have been reports of UFO sightings, and some people walking in the woods have had the sensation of being physically attacked. And there have been a number of fatalities. There are also a number of reports from those who claim to have felt suddenly nauseous when they walk into the woods. Also of feeling they're being followed by something or someone they can't see. And others who've gone walking with their dogs report the dogs vanish. The policeman Peter Goldsmith's body was found hidden among the trees in 1972. A vicar was found dead after disappearing in the forest. And then a young lady named Jill Matthews, her body was discovered murdered in 1981. Now, there have been a number of investigations since the late 80s. And they believe that there was a satanic cult operating in those woods that they said was named Hecate, after the goddess of magic and witchcraft. The human disappearances, which there were several, ended up as open verdicts by the coroner's inquest. Searches were made of the likely routes past these people were thought to have taken, and nothing was ever found. But then later on, bodies were found in areas known to have been extensively searched by the police. In other words, it would seem the bodies were kept, either dead or alive, for some time prior to being put back in a spot where they were most likely to be discovered. And echoes of similarity were found in a number of mysterious disappearances in the national parks of America and Canada, as well as in bodies of water across this country. According to a skeptical investigator named Dave Stringer of the Southern Paranormal Investigative Group, Clapham Woods was visited with a Geiger counter in 1977. And it showed an alarmingly high level of radiation. Several miles to the north of Clapham Woods is Chonkenberry Ring, which is again thought to be the location of possible satanic worship. In fact, Aleister Crowley believed it was a place of great dark power. And there's also another nearby Iron Age hill fort known as Fishberry Ring. All are said to be linked by mystical triangle of ley lines. And then there's the question that I was asked, and I don't have an answer to it. Do certain wilderness areas have more anomalies than others? Why do some forests and woods experience more unnatural incidents than other forests and woods? The Berwyn Mountains lie in North Wales. UFOs. Reports aren't new to this area. Local reports claim this peak region has been the location of many unidentified objects in the sky. Others have seen what they call big cats and hounds of hell. Popular tourist destination for hikers, the mountains is also highly hazardous, with search and rescue teams being called out almost daily for loss to a craft crashed there in 1974. And this area became a hotbed of tales of alien body retrieval, hushed up government activity, weapons testing, men in black, and the same things that grew, that increased to the point that drew comparisons to Rendlesham Forest and even Roswell. And there's a lot of strange tales coming out of Roswell. That was before it became the personal fief of Don Smith. Interestingly, prior to 1974, the area had been plagued by a large number of phantom helicopter sightings. These helicopters are seen flying low at night, often over dangerous terrain and in terrible weather. There's no question, based on a number of witnesses, something was flying around. The question is what? In 2010, the UK government files were released about the incident. The official version explained it was an earth tremor, which came at the same time as a meteor. But according to the BBC, the Ministry of Defense conclusions didn't convince all those who had seen the actual event. There was no question in the minds of many, many witnesses something came down in the Berwyn Mountains on that night. Another mysterious place is Hoa Basile Forest, also known as the Bermuda Triangle, Transylvania. Incidents in this forest include sightings of orbs, unusual physiological sensations many people reported during visits there, including sudden nausea, vomiting, headaches, anxiety, and long-lasting insomnia. People have even come back with unexplained scratches and burns on their skin, and no idea how they got there. This forest became most famous back in the 60s when several photographs were taken of a UFO-shaped object in the sky at low altitude, hovering above the forest. Now, multiple people have gone missing in that forest. Faces, dark shadows, and orbs that aren't visible to the eye commonly appear in photographs. And people who visit often report feeling that they're being watched. Now, from there, let's go to Cornwall, Connecticut. There's another mysterious forest there. Within that area sits Dudley Town, a small old town that has the unfortunate name of the Village of the Damned. I saw a movie by that name 40 years ago. Founded in the 1740s, it was a popular place for tourists. It was set in a dense, beautiful forest among Ball Mountain and Woodbury Mountain. But it started to be called the Dark Entry Forest after the nearby town residents started experiencing hallucinations about demons who they said were tormenting them and telling them to commit suicide. Then they've got instances of livestock going missing. Residents also went missing, and those who didn't frequently left the area never to come back because of the terrifying effect the area had on them. Now, visitors recently say it's now strangely devoid of wildlife and eerily quiet. Orbs of light are often seen dancing across their lines of vision. Set on private land, the Dudley Entry Forest is now said to be patrolled by a shadowy group that threatens anybody with trespass if they enter. Now, nobody really knows why the area is so sinister and filled with unexplained phenomena, but no matter how you look at it, the facts are the facts. On the other side of the world, the Black Mountain region in Australia is also a site of supernatural events. Numerous accounts of mysterious disappearances of people and animals. Now, over history, there have been reports of people disappearing, never to be seen again. Police and trackers who then set out looking for the missing people also vanish. Been reports ranging from strange sounds to sightings of spirits or human-shaped shadows. A lot of reports of shadow people. A disturbing air turbulence has been reported by pilots, giving Black Mountain the name of the Mountain of Death. Alien researchers say it's also a place with UFO activity. Some claim the mountain itself was built by artificial means, or the remnants of an ancient civilization dating back thousands of years, and certainly that could well be possible. Then we have the Bennington Triangle. It was named that by a New England author, Joseph Sithrow, during a radio program in 1992. That name was given to describe an area of the southwestern region of Vermont where a number of people went missing during between 1920 and 1950. Now, Bennington itself is a small town located near the mysterious Glastonbury Mountain. European settlers who founded their homes there began to tell us seeing unusual lights over the mountain. There are also stories of hairy wild men and other strange Bigfoot-type creatures in the woods. The mystery deepened enormously in 1945. That's when 74-year-old Mitty Rivers, who was familiar with the wilderness area, being an experienced hunting and fishing guide,
escorted a group of four hunters into the mountainous woods. Leading the way back to their campsite, he suddenly disappeared from view and literally vanished, leaving only one clue. An extensive search was instigated almost immediately, as soon as they could get searchers in there, but investigators found only one single bullet laying beside a stream bed. No trace of Rivers was ever found. Now, his disappearance was just the first in a series of missing persons cases over the next 5 years. December 1946, just a year later, Paula Weldon, a sophomore at Bennington College, vanished while hiking along the Glastonbury Mountains Long Trail. There was a couple who had been walking behind her, and they told searchers they had saw her walk around a corner of the trail. As the trail turned, she walked around the corner, and when they got there, she was gone. Although the search and rescue team called in the FBI because they were certain it was a kidnapping, the FBI had also come in on the Mitty Rivers case. No trace of Paula Weldon was ever found. On Columbus Day, 1950, 8-year-old Paul Jepson disappeared from the family farm. No trace of the child or his bright red coat were ever found, although hundreds of volunteers combed the mountainside looking for him. Then just 3 weeks later, 53-year-old Frieda Langer slipped into a mountain stream while hiking with her cousin. Telling her cousin she'd catch up with him when, after she changed into dry clothes, she disappeared on the walk back to camp, and it wasn't that far. Subsequent search teams scoured the area on foot and by helicopter and found nothing. Another four searches were then carried out with more than 300 strong parties made up of military, police, and volunteers, combing the area almost foot by foot, but all came up empty-handed. Then in May of 1950, her body was discovered in an area where she couldn't have been missed during the search. It was in an area had been thoroughly searched many times before in the attempts to find her. And again, as in the Crawley Woods cases, there's the implication that her body was seemingly deliberately placed there in order to be found. Oddly, the cause of her death was determined as unknown by the ensuing autopsy. Shockingly, according to some sources, one witness stated the body even appeared fresh, as though she had died only minutes before. And her face bore an expression of horror like she'd died of fright. They couldn't find any wounds, but there was no question she was dead. The implication here again is that she'd been kept somewhere by someone or something in all the months between her disappearance and her body being found. Rumors and theories abound about the location and the reason for the people's fates in that mysterious location. Some believe a Bigfoot-like Bennington monster is a perpetrator. Others cite that there are alien abductions. Others feel there's a portal in the area that opens to another dimension. More and more people believe it to have been a serial killer, and while the more rational among speculators will say the accidents happen in such areas due to the very nature of the great outdoors. And in terms of numbers, this is actually a very tiny proportion of people. That's given the huge amount of visitors to the national park and forest areas such as Bennington. So, the question is, can any of these answers explain why in Maddie's case her body was found without any decomposition? Where had she been in the forest for the months before she was suddenly found dead? Or why was her body found in an area where she had that had been searched numerous times, as though it had been placed there? Now, some observers to all these cases draw parallels with the strange and disturbing phenomena of scores of young men who since the mid-1990s have been vanishing without a trace, only for many of them to be found dead weeks or months later in rivers or creeks around the area. Now, that also they're found in areas of search parties that thoroughly searched numerous times. The bodies appear to have been placed there to be found, as I said before. The term the smiley face killers came about when it was discovered that many of the locations where the bodies had been found had smiley face graffiti nearby. Now, of course, authorities have since discounted this as being tied to the missing persons. But then again, as Leroy Jethro Gibbs has mentioned many times, there's no such thing as coincidence. We got the case of a Chris Jenkins, very popular student at the University of Minnesota. He was on the college swim team. One of the last people you think would drown. He disappeared one night in 2003. His body was discovered in the Mississippi River about 4 months after he disappeared. So the police decided his death looked like an accidental fall after a night of drinking. But interestingly enough, his body was found encased in ice, with his hands folded over his chest in a manner wholly inconsistent with the official verdict of drowning. His cause of death was eventually redetermined as a homicide. No clue as to who or what might have killed him. Then Tyler Blaylock, 19, was found in Kraut Creek, September 29, 2012, in the rural Appalachian State University's southeast side of campus. Police say it looked like he hit his head and fell in the creek. His mother, though, couldn't understand how her son, who was actually a lifeguard, had ended up dead in a creek, of all places. Honor student Jared Dion, again, like the other boys, a popular and athletic person, was discovered 5 days after he disappeared in the river near Wisconsin University in 2004. After an autopsy, it was found he had been moved 10 hours prior to his death, and that because his body was still in rigor, he couldn't have been dead any longer than 72 hours. Meaning he'd been held alive for some time prior to his death and hadn't died the day of his disappearance. Todd Gibb was last seen June 12, 2005. When he was discovered in a remote bed of water, his death was ruled as a drowning. However, when a new autopsy was carried out, he was discovered to have been dead only 2 to 5 days, despite having been missing over 3 weeks. In other words, he had been somewhere alive for about 2 weeks before his death. Why would all these young men willingly vanish? Up to 100 young men, predominantly in the Midwest, but statewide, have disappeared or drowned, all under very similar circumstances. A journalist by the name of Christy Peel was the first to link the cases together. These young, popular, athletic, white college students go missing after a night out drinking with friends. In most cases, they choose to go home alone instead of walking with friends or taking a cab, and they vanish, only to be found sometime later drowned in nearby rivers or creeks. Now, most folks will say they were drunk, disoriented, and fell in the river. Others ask why they'd choose to walk to a river or a creek, often in the middle of winter, rather than go straight home. Some will say inevitably that the reason they're all of a similar victimology is because more young men than women would opt to walk off alone at night. Now, in each case, they're popular college kids letting off steam drinking and underestimating how much they've drunk, who then get into difficulty walking home. Interestingly enough, though, several of them were former lifeguards, a very active sportsman and active outdoorsman, and most of them did not have the reputation of being particularly heavy drinkers. Now, this journalist, Christy Peel, along with two former New York police detectives, some forensic examiners, and many of the victims' families all disagree that the young men have really fallen prey to the outdoors and misadventure. In fact, they veer toward a much more sinister explanation. They think there's a group of killers, identities yet unknown, who deliberately target these young men for reasons not yet known. Christy Peel appeared on Coast to Coast Radio that I've been on a number of times, and she was joined by forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Sikirica to discuss the death of Todd Gibb. The area where he was last seen was thoroughly searched 3 times. During one of the searches, as many as 1,500 volunteers combed the area, didn't find a thing. Then on July 2nd, his body was found. Again, as in the Bennington case and the Cawley Woods case, it was almost as though his body was deliberately placed back in the location so it could be purposefully found. And that does raise many, many interesting questions. When Dr. Sikirica was allowed access to the autopsy files, he concluded through forensic analysis that Todd had been dead only between 2 and 5 days. There was no water in his lungs, so he didn't drown, and his body was in the condition to be expected to be in. He had not been in the water for the 30 days he'd been missing, meaning he was held or kept somewhere for approximately 3 weeks before being taken to the creek. And a number of other medical examiners backed up Dr. Sikirica's opinion at the International Convention of Medical Examiners. Now, this has echoes of Frieda Langer case, where she had been missing alive for longer than the time of her recent death. And Christy Peel said about these cases, a lot of people have asked, who's doing this? Whoever had Todd is clearly a sick individual, and we're going to find a dark human being of a kind we haven't met yet when we determine who's behind all this. Unknown to Peele around this time, Kevin Gannon and Anthony Duarte, retired NYPD detectives, were already investigating mysterious deaths of several college men from New York State. Each of the deaths had been ruled an accidental drowning. They then learned of more student drowning deaths in the Midwest. In all, they were able to connect unexplained drowning deaths in at least 40 male students across the country. Two detectives think that in each of these cases, the missing men were drugged and their bodies then placed in water in order to make it appear as if they drowned. They're of the opinion these deaths are highly likely to be the work of more than one killer because some of them had taken place on the same day in separate geographical states. According to CNN, which you may or may not believe based on their current reputation, Gannon says, "I believe these young men are being abducted by individuals, taken out and held for a period of time before they're entered into the water. He thinks the victims are mentally abused and sometimes physically prior to being killed." An associate professor of criminal justice, Professor Lee Gilbertson of the organization Nationwide Investigations, was quoted by NBC as saying, "This is a nationwide organization that's conducting these killings." Well, the FBI's been requested to investigate the mounting number of disturbing cases occurring and to make efforts to stop them. So far, they're more concerned about getting Trump than they are about getting these whoever's responsible for all these deaths. Patrick McNeil was 21 when he walked out of a bar in New York City on a cold night in February 1997. Told his friends he was taking a subway back to Fordham University. Body was then found near a Brooklyn pier about 2 months later. Pathologist stated he was not drunk when he died of drowning. Another renowned forensic pathologist, Dr. Cyril Wecht, stated there's no way this man is accidentally going to fall in a body of water, and the fly larva found had been laid in the groin area. It's an indoor fly. Could not have been an outdoor fly. The larva was there, did not move ahead into the later stage, so we have a body that was already dead before it was placed in the water. There's no doubt in my mind this was a homicide. The larvae indicate clearly McNeil was kept alive indoors prior to his death. Kevin Gannon, an NYDP homicide detective investigating the McNeil death since 77, said he was stalked, abducted, and held for an extended period of time. Then he was murdered and his body disposed of. Now, some have commented that the victim's clothes had been tampered with prior to being found, suggesting that they were removed and the bodies were redressed. Others have said the victims are being recovered with their clothes, wallets, college IDs, and still intact, but any religious necklaces such as crosses and St. Christopher's that they might have been wearing were missing. Former federal drug enforcement agent Jerry Snyder is the founder of a nonprofit victim search group called Find Me, composed of active and retired law enforcement officials and consultants. Together, they've studied more than 200 of these drowning cases across the country. He said, "Look at all the names here, and we think we've only scratched the surface, and that's the scary thing about it. Is it a cult, a syndicate, a gang of serial killers that has crisscrossed America, traveling to rural college campuses in 25 different cities and a dozen different states in an ever-increasing murder spree? There's not enough information to really definitively tie it down. However, it is fair to say that young men are prone to misadventure after drinking, and there are tragically many documented cases of drowning worldwide. Not necessarily in this number or in this particular ways. It would almost seem as though the men are being deliberately targeted. It's hard to believe that so many educated and sporty men would choose to walk toward rivers in the winter, alone, jump in or fall in, and not rescue themselves. Worryingly, no one has ever yet seen them being abducted, and there are never any witnesses to the crimes. And then you have to ask yourself why the bodies returned to the areas that had previously been searched. Is it the abductor or abductors that are bringing them back? There's no answer to that question. If the idea of serial killers seemed too extreme, maybe there should be some consideration of cases that have clearly involved the capture of a serial killer. In 1999, a murderer was roaming the Yosemite National Park. Three female tourists vanished from their rooms at the Cedar Lodge, which is located on the edge of the park. A few months later, they were found brutally murdered in the park. 5 months later, Joy Armstrong, 26, a naturalist at the Yosemite Institute, also went missing. A truck was found, still parked in the driveway of her home at her cabin. Body was found in the woods not far from the cabin. A park employee noticed a car parked near her cabin on the night of her disappearance, and the police issued an alert for the car. A few days later, police spotted that car parked up near the Merced River Canyon. When they investigated, they found a man wandering about naked. Said his name was Kerry Stainer, and he worked as a handyman at the Cedar Lodge. After this particular encounter, investigators compared the car tracks, the car tires, to the tire tracks found at the crime scene, and they matched. So the police went back and found Stayer again, got him to put some clothes on, and arrested him. After questioning, he confessed, and quickly and readily, to all the killings. Astonishingly, his own family history also revealed a disturbing crime perpetrated against one of his brothers, and perhaps that was something that so disturbed him it shaped him into a killer himself. At age 7, his brother vanished without trace one afternoon in 1972 while walking home from school along the Yosemite Highway. 8 years later, Kerry heard an announcement on the radio his brother had been found. Turned out his brother had been abducted by a pedophile and former employee at the Yosemite Lodge and kept prisoner all those years. It was wondered if perhaps Kerry's homicidal behavior had been caused by his own family's experience. Certainly anything is possible. In 2012, former police officer David Paulides published a book called Missing 411, The Nationwide Astonishment in America. And his subsequent radio interviews were intriguing, to say the least. He detailed a number of people who have gone missing in the national parks of America over a time period that spanned decades. He put the number close to 1,000 unexplained disappearances. Now, ruling out the tragic number of people who fall victim to human error, natural accidents in the park, and natural causes, he described case after case of highly strange and seemingly inexplicable incidents of people vanishing. Sometimes they were found. Sometimes they would never were. And herein lies the similarity in that on a lot of the cases of these people found, he states it would appear almost as if they'd been placed back along the search route so that they could be discovered. It's in the Clapham Woods cases and with the college boys. Paulides says in his many interviews, he was originally led to the phenomenon by two unnamed Park Service employees who approached him about their concerns. Well, rather than discounting their stories of mysterious disappearances, he undertook a thorough and comprehensive... Everybody wants to sell you a warranty on your car. It's amazing. Well, as I said, Paulides was made aware of mysterious disappearances by two unnamed Park Service employees. So he undertook a thorough and comprehensive investigation. It was from this he learned about case after case of mysterious and inexplicable disappearances. There were no unsuccessful kidnapping attempts, and very few witnesses ever saw what happened to the missing people. There are no known cases of somebody almost being taken and being able to relate what almost happened to them. So you have to ask yourself, who or what might be so successful at kidnapping people? What do they do to be able to pull this off with this level of accuracy? Is it some kind of cult? Could a gang of kidnappers or a serial killer abduct people silently each time with absolutely no trace? Is it some kind of natural predator waiting and stalking and striking, hiding in the shadows? Could an animal attack and abduct somebody, yet the victim not cry out or leave any sign of the attack? Could it be a human predator? Was it something unknown we've never had the misfortune, unlike the victims, to yet encounter? Well, it seems that Paulides is not the first to have noticed these strange things happening in the forest of America. Lauren Coleman, a cryptozoologist, noticed phenomena years ago. Then in 2007, the former Parks employee by the name of Butch Farabee published a book called Death in Yosemite, which are descriptions of mysterious deaths and disappearances. And then Juanita Baldwin wrote a book called Unsolved Disappearances in the Great Smoky Mountains. She said this book began with a list of more than 100 people who had met with some kind of misfortune in the Great Smoky Mountains. Some of them vanished in the daylight from different locations on different dates, but in many cases surrounded by other people. One of the many cases that was discussed was that of Thelma Melton, and her name is also listed in the Charlie Project, which profiles over 9,000 missing people cold cases, mainly in the U.S. Thelma was age 58 when she was hiking with her friends, Trula and Red. They were there as a group of families who leased a campground and lived there during the summer months. It was mostly retired people. Thelma, better known as Polly to her friends, set out that day in September 1981 at about 3 p.m. They were going to hike the Deep Creek Trail. They reached the end of the trail, turned around, heading back to the campground, when suddenly, without explanation, Polly began to walk very fast, as if she intended to leave her two friends behind. Well, they grinned at each other, thinking with amusement she'd slow down soon. Now, Polly was a tall lady, about 6 feet tall, a little overweight with high blood pressure. She had to take medication in order to control the nausea the blood pressure caused her. When she didn't slow down at all, her friends started to look at each other with incomprehension. She carried on at that same pace, and they shouted out to her to slow down, but she wouldn't, and finally went over the top of a hill ahead of them. Her friends expected to see her sitting on one of the seats that was located on the other side of the hill, resting after her speedy walk, but when they got to the crest, they didn't see any sign of her. Now, she had hiked that trail with her friends for the last 20 years, and she had never been known to venture off the path. In fact, she had an abiding fear of snakes that would never have let her get off the path. But her friends could find no sign of her. She had absolutely vanished. Well, a search party was arranged and a search made for her, but to this day, she's never been found. The Tri-City Herald covered another story back in March of 1963 when a Miss Pankin took three of her children to look at a waterfall behind their campsite at the Big Lake Resort at Deep Lake, Washington. Reaching the waterfall, she told her 4-year-old son Bobby to sit down on the ground and wait for him as they walked 10 feet away from him to get closer to the waterfall. When she and her other children walked back only a couple of minutes later, Bobby was gone. Now, he had been wearing just his swimming shorts and no shoes, so they spread out to look for him and finally returned to the campsite to get help. Local sheriffs organized a search party, and at midnight, a canine tracked Bobby's scent for 2 miles till they came to a fork in a logging road and stopped. At that point, the dog didn't lose the scent. It refused to go any further. Well, the search lasted for a week with over 1,000 people on foot and horseback looking for him. No trace was ever found. The road wouldn't fit for cars to drive down, so it wasn't possible for him to be taken by a car. And dogs that would track bears were brought in, and they didn't pick up any scent of bears, and no visible signs that an animal had been involved, and they couldn't find the boy either. Some of the newspapers thought maybe an eagle had picked the child up. His father said it's as if Bobby climbed up to the top of a tree and kept on going. Well, set up in 1997, the Crater Lake Institute provides a chronology of strange incidents that have occurred at the Crater Lake National Park. Back in the 70s, photographer Charles McCullough went there to photograph the picturesque winter scenery and vanished. Well, we're going to talk more about how bits of his bones were found and marvel at the fact that he had walked on top of 105 inches of new snow for 14 miles where his bones were found. But for the time being, we've run out of time. So until tomorrow at this same time, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.